Thank you for your attention today, and I discuss a subject that is at once threatening and not all that easy to understand. Led by Barack Obama and his Muslim advisor, Valerie Jarrett, there is a major effort afoot to play down the danger of Islamic terrorism and to lull us into acceptance of it. Most Americans do not have the time nor the perseverance to understand this rapidly increasing threat to our country and to each of our lives. To put it bluntly, unless you are willing to deny the God who created you and become a Muslim, worshiping Islam and Allah, you are, in their eyes, an infidel, and their faith requires them to kill you. Notice that I said requires them to kill you, because there is no middle ground. You either convert to Islam or be put to death. If that does not cause your blood to chill, it should. With such a sword hanging over our heads, it's foolish to listen to those who invite us into their politically correct world with assurances that Islamic terrorism is confined to a small number of ignorant radicals, while Islam is really a religion of peace. Nothing could be further from the truth. There may well be a number of Muslims who are not waiting patiently in your neighborhood to kill you in the name of Allah. But the faith instructs them to kill infidels and urges them to lie to you about their intentions. Muslims are urged to infiltrate and to appear to be good neighbors. How can you tell which Muslim means you no harm? You can't. That's not conjecture, it's a fact. Just a few short years ago, Ann and I ended a cruise in Istanbul. We were anxious to learn all about the city with so much history. We hired a Muslim driver that we knew nothing about and toured the spots of interest. We walked the ancient streets alone and had no fear. That was then. But last week, Islamic terrorists killed at least 10 people in a violent explosion in Istanbul. The terrorists had been biding their time, and when the opportunity was right, they struck. Because it was in far-off Turkey, Americans note the incident, but they have a tendency to dismiss the danger there. That is a grave mistake. We have Islamic terrorists right here in America, some who've been here for decades and others who are just arriving as refugees or overstaying their visas in great numbers. And they will bide their time for the opportunity to appease Allah by killing you and me. Termites cannot destroy our homes in a day, a week, or several months, but given enough time, termites can and will destroy your home. The same is true of Islamic terrorism and those who tell us that Islamic terror groups are not something we should be so concerned about. They're either ignorant or they're willing accomplices to terror. Hint, they are not ignorant. Get a pen and paper. I'm going to give you the name of a book that everyone should read. The author is Dr. Tawfiq Hamid. I'll spell the first name, T-A-W-F-I-K, Hamid, H-A-M-I-D. The name of the book is Inside Jihad, and you can get it in paperback. I included this book in my research for today's commentary. This Muslim man was taught hate and recruited for jihad from birth, but as he aged, he rejected it. This man has seen the devil up close, and he explains why we should be afraid and what to do about it. Today, I hope you'll bear with me as I attempt to explain Islam in terms easier to understand. While it is tedious, it is vital for our understanding of the Muslim determination to dominate the world and to eliminate any and all who do not convert to Islam. Dr. Hamid provides an overview of Islam. The word Islam means submission to God or Allah. Islam is a faith that originated in the early 7th century with Prophet Muhammad. The Quran is the Bible of Islam, and Muslims believe that it contains the literal word of God as transmitted to the archangel Gabriel. The revelation of the Quran to Muhammad is marked by Islam's holiest month, Ramadan. Muhammad's words and deeds are considered to be the main component of Islam. The Quran is divided into 114 chapters, called Suwar, and contains 6,236 poetic verses. The Quran does not cover every aspect of Islamic life. Many Muslims look to the Sunnah, the source of Sharia law, as recorded in the Hadiths, for guidance when the Quran is silent. Hadiths are the words and deeds of the Muslim prophet Muhammad during his lifetime. Muhammad died in the year 632. Although Islam has a number of sects and systems of belief, Muslims typically are required to obey the so-called five pillars of Islam. The first pillar, called Shahada, is the basic testament of every Muslim. It reads, "I testify that there is none worthy of worship except God, Allah, and I testify that Muhammad is the messenger of God." That statement is uttered upon conversion to Islam. Islam does not practice baptism as Christianity does, nor does it have any other initiation ritual. The second pillar, called Salah, is the obligation to pray five times each day. The third pillar of Islam, Zakah, is charity. Every Muslim must assist less fortunate Muslims based upon their ability to do so. Notice it's contained to Muslims, no one else. The fourth pillar, Psalm, means to fast. Muslims are required to fast during the month of Ramadan. The fifth and final pillar of Islam is the Hajj. Once in every Muslim's life, they must travel to Mecca and worship if they are able to do so. Islamic law, or Sharia, is central to Islamic life today. Sharia is considered by Muslims to be divine law and is considered to be the only law that should be ultimately respected. Current mainstream Islamic teaching insists that good Muslims must declare war on infidels. That means anyone who does not accept Islam and its prophet Muhammad. Infidels are offered three options. We can convert to Islam, or pay a humiliating poll tax called jizya and become a second-class citizen. The third option, be put to death. Any representation of Allah or Muhammad is regarded as idolatrous and is forbidden. That explains the hysteria of Muslims when the cartoons of Muhammad were published and their warpath to kill those cartoonists. Under the first Muslim caliphates, in less than 150 years period, Islam exploded across the Middle East, North Africa, and parts of Europe in what is known as the Islamic conquests. In that relatively short period of time, many native languages and religions disappeared, swallowed up by Arabic and Islam. In traditional Islamic families, boys start learning to pray at age 7, and they're urged to attend a mosque by the age of 10. What about girls, you might wonder? Well, girls have little value in the Islamic society, which offers its rewards and its opportunities to men exclusively. Women are treated like cattle. They are, quite simply, objects. Dr. Hamid points out, it is difficult to kill innocent people if you don't hate that person. Hatred toward the infidels is not only promoted by jihadist groups, but it also fits in the mainstream of Islamic teaching. There are basically two sects of Muslims, Sunnis and Shia, and they've been killing one another for over thousands of years. Sunnis are by far the largest sect of Islam. The second largest sect in Islam is the Shia, sometimes called Shiites, who believe that Muhammad's cousin Ali was divinely appointed as the only legitimate successor to Muhammad. Shiites are a majority only in Iran, Iraq, Azerbaijan, and Bahrain. Young Sunni Muslims comprise the list of suicide bombers much more so than the Shia. The rampages of rape can be attributed, in part at least, to the fact that young Shia Muslims are permitted a brief marriage permit, allowing them to have premarital sexual relations. Young Sunni Muslims do not have that option. Young Shiites, then, do not need to martyr themselves in suicide attacks in order to engage in non-marital sex, something only permitted for Sunnis when they arrive in paradise. Suicide bombers are promised that they will enter paradise and be rewarded with 72 virgins. Talk about overkill. Their minds are manipulated from birth. Their fixation on sex, whether with young boys, women, or animals, follows them wherever they go. The Muslim Brotherhood is the closest ally of and shares the same ideology with Hamas, a group the U.S. government has correctly classified as a terror organization. It was founded in 1928 in Egypt, and it's the mother of all radical Islamic groups. Their goal is to install Sharia law wherever they gain power. Their motto is this: Allah is our objective. The Quran is our constitution. The Prophet is our leader. Jihad is our way. Death for the sake of Allah is our wish. The Muslim Brotherhood took over government in Egypt a few years ago, but the Egyptian people rose up by the millions to expel them and their leader, Mohamed Morsi. The Muslim Brotherhood is outlawed in Egypt, and yet many of its members have been brought into the highest levels of our government by Barack Obama and his Muslim advisor, Valerie Jarrett. Amazingly, few, if any, in Congress have rose up to protest the inclusion of members of this terror organization in sensitive areas of our government, including Homeland Security. The liberal mainstream media refuses to investigate or report on this heinous attack on our freedom and liberty, keeping Americans in the dark about the Muslim intent to dominate us is at the heart of tahiyya. That's the Arabic word for fear. And it's the practice of deceiving infidels by engaging in practices that seem to belie devotion to Sharia law and jihad in order to advance radical Islam's agenda. In short, Muslims are advised to lie about their true intentions. Some of the 9/11 hijackers in the days leading up to their attack went to bars and strip clubs and drank alcohol, all to persuade any suspicious souls that they were not jihadists. To sum it up, followers of Islam lie to advance their agenda, and it's condoned by their faith. How then are we to trust what they tell us? Even those of us who want to believe that there are peaceful Muslims cannot possibly know of their true intentions. ISIS is not our only danger. Boko Haram, loosely transmitted, means Western education is forbidden, especially among girls and women. For more than a decade, Boko Haram has been carrying out violence in rural Nigeria, but has recently aligned itself with Al-Qaeda and ISIS. Hezbollah literally means the Party of Allah, and it's a Shia jihadist group and political party based in Lebanon, and has been engaging in terror attacks, mostly against Israel, for over three decades. Al-Qaeda is the best known of radical Islamic terrorist groups, until ISIS came along. Al-Qaeda means the foundation and was established by Osama bin Laden and others in Afghanistan in the wake of the Russian invasion from the late 1970s through the late 1980s. About three-quarters of Al-Qaeda's leadership is Egyptian. 15 of the 19 hijackers that perpetrated the 9/11 attacks were Saudis. Islam has more than 1.5 billion followers, making it the world's second largest religion. State Department spokesperson Marie Harf ignorantly ask what makes these young Muslims pick up an AK-47 rather than start a business, implying that poverty compels these jihadists. But there are lots of impoverished non-Muslim countries around the world, particularly in Africa and Asia, who don't become suicide bombers. Moreover, the leaders of Muslim jihad are overwhelmingly educated and from families with money. Bin Laden himself was a Saudi billionaire. These devious people are able to practice mind control over ignorant Muslims who then strap on suicide vests with dreams of dominating 72 virgins in the promised land. If poverty is the root cause of Islamic terrorism, we would have seen the majority of jihadists hail from a background of poverty from the poorest Islamic countries like Somalia and Nigeria. Islamism is the principal source of terrorism. When poor nations fail to produce terrorists while Islamic societies spawn them in large numbers, the truth is self-evident. Consider the hate and violence directed at Israel by Arab states and leftists across the world. Instead of hailing Israel as an example of democracy in a region where democracy is conspicuously absent, instead of defending a small nation bullied and attacked by its larger oil-rich Islamic neighbors, the left has chosen to demonize Israel as an oppressor of the Palestinians. With global Islamic terror, the result: the international left is overwhelmingly, almost entirely, anti-American. And for this reason, its members harbor deep hatred toward Israel. In 2014, a poll showed that 89% of Palestinians supported Hamas and other terrorist organizations that are firing rockets into Israel. That percentage is higher today. The Arab mouthpiece, Al Jazeera, reported in 2015 that 81% of Muslims polled supported ISIS. 81%. And an informal poll of Saudis in late 2014 showed that 92% agreed with ISIS that it conforms to the values of Islam and Islamic law. Yet we are told that Saudi Arabia is our friend and ally. We must understand that the reason for the jihadists' animosity towards America is because they seek domination by Islam through Sharia. America, because of its freedoms, its military power, and its secular society and government, stands as the greatest obstacle to Islam's world domination, not Israel. Islamic extremists do not try to dominate Russia and China because those two countries would respond without regard to collateral damage, and the jihadists know it. In contrast, jihadists know that American concerns for human rights constrains our retaliation. If America truly was an imperial or ruthless power, it would have long ago conquered and obliterated the OPEC nations and taken over their oil. Given this context, trying to place blame for Islamic terror on American foreign policy is ludicrous. Ask any Muslim child in the Arab world for the meaning of jihad, and they will answer that it is a war against infidels. Now, large numbers of Muslims from America to Thailand are supporting, financing, and taking pride in acts of terror by their fellow Muslims. Millions more remain silent as the carnage continues to grow. Since 9/11, we have heard that the Wahhabist sect in Saudi Arabia has been exporting terror. What is Wahhabism? It is the prevailing Islamic force in Saudi Arabia. Women there are forced to cover their faces completely with a black mask. Muslims are required by law to attend prayer 5 times a day. It is strictly forbidden to build a Christian church in Saudi Arabia. They finance mosques in America, but deny the right to allow a church to be built in Saudi Arabia to this very day, and we tolerate it. We know that many, if not most, of those mosques are recruiting grounds for Islamic jihad, and yet the liberal left rebels at the idea of monitoring what goes on in those mosques. That is insanity. More than half of the mosques in the United States severely advocate violence. Only 19% of the mosques in the United States had no violent texts at all. In Mecca, there are separate freeways for Muslims and non-Muslims. People in Saudi Arabia are beheaded for so-called crimes like adultery, homosexuality, and leaving Islam. Lesser crimes, such as theft, meet with amputation of limbs. Slavery is and always has been part of Islam. The perfect world for these people is one in which non-believers are slain, adulterous women are stoned to death, not the men, just the woman. Enslavement of war captives is permitted. Polygamy is admired, and wives can be beaten anytime the husband deems it appropriate. In the Arab world, a poll taken by Al Jazeera in 2006 found that 57.9% of respondents supported jihad. There's some 3 million Muslims in the United States today, meaning that 240,000 American Muslims consider suicide bombings to be justified. A Pew survey showed that 60% of American Muslims do not believe that Arabs were responsible for the 9/11 attacks. Osama bin Laden himself claimed responsibility for those attacks. But more than half of all Muslims choose to deny the obvious. Only when we see masses of Muslims demonstrating against ISIS and Al-Qaeda can we believe that the majority of Muslims are against them. It hasn't happened as yet, and it's doubtful that it will ever happen. Every year during the Hajj, the pilgrims circle a symbol of Satan and throw rocks at it. The purpose is to express their anger at Satan for making them sin and to deter them from doing so in the future. They are not responsible for their sinning. The devil is. Omar Ahmad is the founder of the Council of American Affairs known as CARE. He said in 1998, "Islam isn't in America to be equal to any other faith, but to become dominant. The Quran, the Muslim book of scripture, should be the highest authority in America, and Islam the only accepted religion on earth." Most of us have seen these CARE representatives rush before the cameras after Muslim atrocities to offer excuses and tell us that most Muslims are moderates. The mainstream media runs to the same old CARE spokesman to give them leeway to mislead us. If a Muslim is truly moderate, he or she should not hesitate to reject clearly and unambiguously the hateful aspects of Sharia. What are the hateful aspects? Among others, over 90% of Pakistani women have been beaten or abused sexually. In Iran, a girl is legally marriageable when she reaches the age of 9. To divorce a wife, a Muslim man needs only say, "I divorce you," 3 times, which leaves the woman with no income and the status as an outcast. In Saudi Arabia, a woman was recently gang-raped by 4 men while a 5th man recorded the event on his smartphone. The woman received a sentence of 90 lashes for being alone in a car with a man who was not her husband. Women are forbidden to drive cars, to vote. In many parts of the Islamic world, girls undergo female genital mutilation because it's believed that doing so makes women chaste and docile. Sound hateful to you? It does to me. Desensitizing violence is one of the tactics jihadists use to indoctrinate and train their recruits. When a Muslim man becomes indifferent to a woman being beaten, maimed, or stoned to death, it becomes a much smaller step for him then to commit acts of violence. The more we surrender, the more Islamists demand. Barack Obama has bent over backwards to avoid admitting any association between Islam and jihadist terrorism. When Westerners make concessions, such as installing weaker governments or withdrawing from combat zones, the actions only embolden the jihadists. When Obama played politics and withdrew American forces from Iraq, he did so in spite of the numerous experts who warned that doing so would create a vacuum that Islamic terrorists would rush to fill. It can be said that Barack Obama, with the backing of liberal Democrats, created the ISIS that we see today. Speaking of liberal Democrats, remember when Bernie Sanders and Hillary Clinton told us that we should be more like Denmark? Well, 3/4 of all rapes in Denmark are committed by immigrants, almost entirely Muslim, because Denmark opened its doors to these Muslims, just as Obama is trying to make us do today. Denmark is beginning to realize that it was a huge mistake to allow hordes of Muslims into their country. Do we really want to be like that? Other countries with a similar crisis include Sweden, Norway, Belgium, Germany, Thailand, and Australia. It is only when nations fail to be judicious about whom they let in and how they administer immigration that the problems begin. Only since 9/11 has the West realized how much of a threat radical Islam has become. Before, it was a creeping thing toward the United States. Today, it is rushing headlong toward us. Jihadists consider limited military responses as weakness, upon which they will seize as motivation to intensify their terrorist efforts. While the New Testament of our Bible specifically condemns violence of both thought and action, traditional Islamic texts promote fighting and murdering people at all times, everywhere, solely based on the victim's beliefs. Many Muslim scholars and clergy promote the notion that Jews are apes and pigs, and that Muslims must kill every Jew before the end of days. Muslim children learn peaceful verses of the Quran at school during the day and violent passages at mosques in the evenings. We must fight Sharia at every turn. We must lose our fear of offending, and we must stop political correctness and offering excuses for terrorists. ISIS has declared its own state from parts of Iraq and Syria that it invaded. Their caliphate, known as Al-Khilafah in Arabic, originally was the seat of power after Muhammad's death, and then the central authority when the Islamic conquest began in the 7th century. Now it persists as a concept among jihadists of a return to a worldwide Islamic empire under Sharia law. This is not the first time the world has been under fire from Islamists seeking to dominate it. Islam has reared its head several times, only to be pushed back by force. The difference this time is political correctness and naivete, particularly among college-age Americans. That, plus a president of the United States who openly endorses Islam and refuses to see the danger it presents to our country. The question of whether or not Barack Obama is a Muslim misses the point. He endorses it, he protects it, and he aids in its expansion through his inaction. He has as his closest advisor a committed and devious Muslim, Valerie Jarrett, and has gathered around him an unsavory cast of characters from the Muslim Brotherhood who serve in sensitive areas of the Obama administration. All of that serves the cause of Islamic expansion at the expense of America. Former UN chief John Bolton has said that the greatest danger we face is not ISIS, but Barack Obama. And I believe now that that is true. But Obama alone did not bring us this resurgence of Islamic violence. Islamic terrorists watched carefully as Jimmy Carter proved to be impotent when Iran took our embassy staff hostage in Tehran and held them for 444 days. In January of 1981, those hostages were hastily released because of the fear of retaliation from incoming President Ronald Reagan. The episode of our hostages sent two unmistakable messages. First, the United States, under pressure, would abandon its friends and allies. And two, the United States had been had defeated Nazi Germany and crushed Imperial Japan had lost its willingness to engage the enemy with enough force and determination to defeat them completely. Nearly 20 years ago, the CIA located Osama bin Laden in Afghanistan. Bill Clinton had it within his power to kill or capture this ruthless Islamic jihadist. But Clinton balked because he feared collateral civilian casualties. Because Clinton did not act, bin Laden was able to plan and order the attacks on 9/11, and thousands more Americans died than would have been the number of collateral casualties had Bill Clinton acted against bin Laden. Obsessing over the treatment of our enemies only jeopardizes more American lives. It is also unhelpful when certain U.S. politicians and liberal followers protest to outlaw enhanced interrogation like waterboarding and to punish CIA officers who conduct them. That plays into the hands of the Islamic terrorists, who do not play by any rules themselves, but watch gleefully as our useful idiots seek to tie our hands. Excusing ISIS as being un-Islamic, as Obama and other liberals do today, is asinine. It is like calling Islam a religion of peace while ignoring the widespread command that Muslims must fight non-Muslims to dominate them in the name of Allah. Again, I recommend the book Inside Jihad by Dr. Tawfiq Hamid, a former jihadist himself. He offers the best inside information on this growing threat of Islamic terrorism, and I used his book extensively in my research for this commentary. Dr. Hamid's wife wrote the following. Listen carefully. Who should be angry? Should it be the Muslims who kill innocents everywhere in the name of their God, Allah? Or should it be the Christians who have seen their churches burnt by Muslims in Iraq and elsewhere? The Jews who have watched their kids be slain by Muslims in pizza parlors? The Buddhists who have seen their ancient statues of Buddha destroyed by the Taliban? The Hindus who have seen their most holy temple burnt to the ground at the hands of Muslims? Or the Sikhs who witnessed Muslims burning one of their gurus alive as he preached a message of peace and love? Who should be angry? The Muslims who celebrated 9/11, mutilated dead bodies, burned people in cages, crucified children, or beheaded hostages on videotape? Or should it be the rest of the world, which suffers from Islamic terror every day? We live today in a different world than at any time in history. Is our situation hopeless? Not at all. Again, when the Egyptian Brotherhood took over power in Egypt, millions of Egyptians recognized the danger and rose up to chase them out of power. We can do the same here, but not if we rely on traditional political parties and a disgraced media to do the job. They are in bed together and have been for more than 60 years. No one should be allowed to go to Congress and stay until they die or succumb to senility. Far too often, we have elected people who promise to make changes, but who quickly fall into line with party politics. Seniority rules, even if the person with seniority is corrupt. Being the oldest doesn't mean you're the best qualified, and yet the system forces newer members of Congress to bow to those who have been there longer. If we have not learned anything from people like Harry Reid, Nancy Pelosi, Debbie Wasserman Schultz, and Mitch McConnell, then we have met the enemy, and they are us. My purpose today is to help you understand the movement called Islam and the danger that we face from Islamic jihadists if we continue to allow it to flourish in America. I hope that you found my efforts helpful and that much of the confusion surrounding jihad has been better explained. Do not despair. There is hope. But it requires more of us than to accept the status quo. Our first duty is to go to the polls in November and vote. Vote for real change, not some Mickey Mouse rhetoric that sets us back. This should not be a popularity vote, but one for the future of this country. There is no longer any room for error. We either put the best people in place, regardless of party, race, creed, gender, or color, and then hold them to their promises, or we consign our country to the dustbin of history. I ask you to search your soul and vote your conscience. Do we survive and prosper? Or do we follow the great powers of history who felt that they too were invincible and who lost it all? I leave it to each of you to make that decision. God bless America.